Yes, thank you so much.
Just anywhere?
Anywhere you like, where you're most comfortable.
Well, my one heart to be closer because of the microphone.
Yeah, I think so.
I need to connect my computer.
You can.
See if that is it. Is it even good? Oh,
if not, there is one here. This is fine.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Just want to make sure that.
Because of like my power will hold on my computer.
Oh my god.
Hey, you so disrupted.
It's fine.
Alrighty, I think we're just about ready.
Mm-hmm. You're good?
Yeah, I think so. I'm ready. Thank you.
After all the moving. Okay. Alright, are you all ready? Good to go?
I think I am.
Go ahead and start, I guess.
All right.
Next week, go ahead.
I will need to know where to log in to. I mean, yes, so I get my.
You don't have to log in. I'll put it up.
The camera. Oh, okay. But what about the documents?
Yeah.
All right. So it is 5:39, and it's a special called meeting of the Hispanic Latino Quality of Life Resource Advisory Commission, August 2nd. And we're here at the Permitting and Development Center. And thank you for everyone joining us online. And thank you for being patient, everyone here in person and online, while we got the technology all worked out in the new room that we were placed in. So thank you. Jeremy, will you take roll?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll do roll call, starting from the very top. We have District 1 Representative, Commissioner Daniela Silva.
Present.
Next, we have District 2 Representative, Chair Amanda Afifi.
Here.
Next, we have District 3 Representative, Commissioner Vanessa Maldonado.
Here.
Thank you. Next, we have District 4 Representative, Commissioner Ivana Neri.
Present.
Districts 5 and District 6, both of those representatives are vacant right now, but hopefully we'll have them placed soon. Next, we have District 7, Commissioner Sharon Vijo. Sharon, are you with us? I see you online.
Yes, I'm figuring it out. Hold on. President, you have to see me, right?
Yeah, we do have to see you. There we go. We see you. Thank you very much. Next, we have District 8, Commissioner Jesus Perales, who is going to be absent today. Next, we have District 9, Commissioner Leona Vargas. Thank you very much. I see you there. Next, we have District 10, Commissioner Dulce Castaneda. And last but not least, we have the mayor's appointee, Commissioner Eliza May.
Present.
Perfect. All right, we officially have a quorum to conduct business.
All right, and so first up, anyone signed up for public communication?
No public communication contacted me for sign up. Are any of y'all here for public communication? That's speaking to items that are not on the agenda. I just want to make sure. Okay, we're good. Okay, no public communication today.
All right, and so then next we'll go to approval of minutes.
Yeah, I think y'all are set for, y'all are on the agenda for a briefing. So these are folks who are not on the agenda. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then next up, approval of minutes. And Jeremy sent those out earlier today with all the other documents for the meeting. And so I'll give everyone a little bit of time to look it over.
current motion for approval?
Yeah, if everyone had time to go through.
Mm-hmm. Ready, I am. I can make your motion.
If everybody's ready on the minutes, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion for approval.
So Commissioner May moves to approve the minutes.
I second.
And Commissioner Netty seconds. All in favor, go ahead and raise your hand, say aye.
Aye.
All right, and that's everyone. All right, thanks y'all. So next up, community briefing. And we have Angie Town and Sylvia Blanco from the Housing Authority of Austin on the redevelopment of the Santa Rita Courts, which is the first public housing complex in the United States. So thank you, Angie and Sylvia.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, buenas tardes. Good evening. My name is Sylvia Blanco. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. Thank you for taking the time to hear a little update on what the Housing Authority has been working on, and with an emphasis on some upcoming plans for Santa Rita. But first, I wanted to provide a little bit of background. The Housing Authority of the City of Austin has been around since 1937. We take pride in the fact that then Congressman LBJ had a big hand in the creation of Austin's Housing Authority. And so we also have some of the oldest public housing that was created under the 1937 Housing Act. And those three are Rosewood Courts, Santa Rita Courts, and Chalmers Courts. So we have been undergoing a lot of redevelopment and major improvements to these three historic properties. As you can imagine, dating back to 1939, number one, they didn't have air conditioning, central air, and some other, modern amenities, basic modern amenities that so many of us take for granted these days. And so we knew it was time to make a major shift in improving the quality of life for our families who call these three properties home. And so I do want to touch on some of the work that we have been doing at these three properties in particular. I'm not sure, Jeremy, if you will be the sort of navigator on moving the slide deck forward. Do I just let you know when to move the slide? Perfect.
Yes, please do.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeremy. So if you can see on the screen here, this gives you a little glimpse into some of that history of these three properties. Again, we were formed under the 1937 Housing Act, and we were again formed with the help of then Congressman Lyndon Baines Johnson. And these three properties were built between 1938 and 1940. Next slide, please. So this gives you a little snapshot of what these properties look like today. So up on the top, you see Santa Rita. It essentially looks the same as it does, as it did back in the 1930s. This is actually a two-story building, which actually came in a later phase. The first phase were the one-story bungalows that are along East 2nd Street and Pedernales. Rosewood Courts, you see a rendering here. We are in the midst of actively constructing the new Rosewood Courts. If you've driven by Chicon Street and Rosewood Avenue, you can definitely tell there's activity going on out there, and we are also preserving eight of the buildings as part of the historic district out there. And then you see on the bottom corner, Chalmers Courts. This one, it has been going through a three-phase redevelopment, and we are just about done with the final phase. We are so excited to be able to finally be able to get all three properties open. This one, I believe, is Chalmers South that you're seeing here. That was the first of the three phases. And I'm going to go into a little bit more detail here in just a second on Chalmers and also on Rosewood. But of course, it was very important for us to make some big strides in revitalizing these aging properties. And again, not only improving quality of life for our current families, but also expanding the number of affordable housing units that we can provide to the community. And that is all wrapped with a lot of support services and programs that we provide to our residents, ranging from health and wellness services to job training to after-school tutoring and digital literacy and everything in between. And we do that in partnership with many, many great programs, and not the least of which is CIS. And so we have really, really enjoyed our longstanding partnership with communities and schools to provide that very, very vital case management for at-risk youth, as well as the tutoring. And it's a wonderful wraparound services. So shout out to Sharon on that wonderful partnership. And also, very importantly, preserving the historic legacy of these properties. We want to celebrate the history and the legacy of these communities and the families who have called it home over the years. And so we have also done a lot of work in that space. So next slide, please. So here you'll see a quick snapshot of the site plan of the three phases that we have worked on there at Pathways of Chalmers Courts. And so you'll see to the south, that is Chalmers Court South. That was 86 units that was created initially, and that helped us to provide some swing space, if you will. So for the existing Chalmers Courts families, they had an opportunity to literally just go right across the street while we did the demolition and rebuilding of the original Chalmers Courts. And that was really important for us to ensure that our families had access to their existing support system, and it also helped to minimize any disruption for the school kids. And they have a wonderful neighborhood school right there in the heart of Zavala. And so that was also very important to ensure that they had that continuity. And so I was also very pleased to see that, you know, out of the families that were relocated, close to 90% of our families chose to remain within the Chalmers Courts community. And that was really, really helpful to ensure the continuity of that community and their networks, their medical providers, everything. So we're really pleased to see that. For Chalmers East, you see that on the upper right-hand side. We created 156 brand new apartments there. And we also are in the process of opening, in conjunction with Community Care, a medical clinic and dental clinic that is literally on site at the property, and we're really excited about that. In fact, we have a grand opening next week on the 11th to celebrate that, and of course everyone is cordially invited to attend. And then Chalmers West on the left-hand side, that one we are hoping, by later this fall, we will be opening up the new 156 units there of affordable housing and subsidized housing. And that will provide, again, a sorely needed resource of affordable, deeply affordable housing for the East Austin community. And we've also got a great partnership at Chalmers West with Boys and Girls Club. So that will provide a free resource for after school clubs, and also year-round during the summer as well, when the kids don't have school, they have a place to go that's safe and inviting, and will have, for me, you know, as a parent, it's I think a comfort as well, knowing that they are going to be supervised and have, you know, great activities that they will have access to right there on site at the property. Next slide, please. So this gives you a little bit of a snapshot as well of the various phases. As I mentioned, phase one, Chalmers South, that was opened up several years ago and has 86 units that allowed for many of the residents to remain very close to home. And then phase two, Chalmers East, that opened up just a little over a year ago, and I'm probably getting the timing wrong, so Ann, please correct me if I'm wrong there. So Chalmers East is right there on the upper right-hand side, and then as mentioned on phase three, Chalmers West will be opening up very, very soon before the end of this year. And also, as I mentioned, we have Community Care Clinic that will have a grand opening on August 11th. And this will be a great community asset, not only to our Chalmers families, but also to the surrounding neighborhood. Again, medical and dental clinic right there at their footsteps. So we're really excited about that partnership. Next slide, please. So I wanted to now touch on Rosewood Courts, which is, again, actively under construction. This is a decade in the making. We did a lot of comprehensive planning with not only our Rosewood residents, but also many, many community stakeholders, the historic preservation community, and others. And so this was definitely a labor of love for me. So I was there from day one on this project. And so what you see here is the site plan. You see Chicon Street on the left-hand side, and up at the top is Rosewood Avenue, just to orient you. So on the left triangle there, you see those blue buildings, and that represents the eight building historic district of Rosewood Courts. So all of those eight buildings are being completely renovated inside and out. And we are going to completely modernize the inside of these buildings so that they are going to have the exact same amenities as what you would find in the new construction buildings. And speaking of the new construction, those are going to be essentially in the center of the site map. So you see building A up towards the top. That's going to be a four-story building, and that will have about 90 units there. And then further into the center, building B, we've got about 39 units that will go into that four-story building, and then building C, which will have another 35 units. So the grand total, we have 124 units, or previously we had 124 units of public housing there at Rosewood Courts. And so upon completion of this project, we will be adding 60 new affordable units, so for a total of 184 apartments. So we're really excited about adding that density. And you'll see on the upper triangle there on the left-hand side, it has some green space there. And that is going to be a commemorative green space that will honor the legacy of Emancipation Park. So if you're not aware of the history, the land that was used back in the 1939 time frame to build Rosewood Courts, it was actually seized by the city of Austin through eminent domain to build Rosewood Courts. And it was the original site of Emancipation Park, which was owned by former African-American slaves. And so this was their celebration space for Juneteenth get-togethers and other events throughout the years. So there's a lot of history here, and we want to be part of telling the story of this legacy. And so this commemorative green space will help us to honor that history of Emancipation Park as well as Rosewood. And next to that triangle, next to that green space, you see a darker orange square there. And that is going to be the site of a future welcome center. And so this new welcome center will also be open to the public, and it will have exhibit space, it will have classroom space and other types of amenities that will be available and open to for visitors to come and learn more about Emancipation Park, learn more about Rosewood Courts and its history, and of the African American community as a whole. And we're excited about partnering with E4U in helping us to activate that space and provide some opportunities for tours and other events that will help to again elevate the history of the area and also the property and Emancipation Park. Another area that I want to point out is on the right hand side, the other blocks of orange that you see there is our homeownership component. And so we're super thrilled to be partnering with Austin Habitat for Humanity and building 12 brand new affordable townhomes that will be for sale. And we are giving priority to our Hakka families who are ready for that next step of home ownership. And so we're super excited about bringing 3-bedroom, 2-bath units and also a 4-bedroom in there for families. And these will be, of course, much more affordable than the median sales price that you're finding in Austin. They should be $200,000 or about $185,000. So we're super excited about bringing this product to our families. So let's see, next slide, please.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Well,
that's a good technology.
What's the state? In what stage is the Rosewood Court at right now? Is it in the design and planning?
Actually, we have completed all of the design plans for Rosewood Court, and we are actively constructing what has been designed. So it's an active construction site. So we have the design fully finalized.
And when is it expected to finalize and for people to start moving into it?
So we hope that it will be ready for new families by either the end of 2024 or early 2025. Now, Ann or Angie, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to misrepresent the timeline on that. Does that sound about right?
You're right, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so hopefully, by late 24, early 25, we will be welcoming back our Rosewood Court families who are temporarily relocated. And we will be covering all of the moving expenses to bring them back to Rosewood. And we will also have additional apartments that will be available to anyone who is interested in calling Pathways at Rosewood Courts their home.
Thank you.
Question. Were any of the of the previous apartments conserved and then maybe rehabbed, or is it completely all race project and then you're building from ground up?
So, yeah, great question, and to kind of reiterate that, so you, if you want to go back to the previous slide, Jeremy, I'll point out this on the site plan again. So unfortunately I can't like use my cursor or anything, but if you see sort of on the bottom left hand side of the site plan, you see 8, there you go. So you see 8 buildings there in blue. Mm-hmm. All of, yeah, there you go. Thank you, Jeremy. All of those are original buildings that we are preserving. So we have a very robust historic preservation component of Rosewood Courts. And so all of those 8 buildings are original to the property and they are going to be fully renovated. So from the outside, we are restoring the exteriors to harken back to when they were first built 1939, so we have removed the pitch roofs, for example, and we are exposing the original flat roofs. We are also in the process of testing some paint removal processes to see if we can safely remove the layers of paint that have covered up the original brick. And we have also we're also going to be outfitting the exteriors with casement style windows that harken back to the original windows. So from the outside, we're doing an extensive historic restoration. And from the inside, we are fully gutting it, and we're going to make the living spaces much more spacious and bring them up to code. As you can imagine, from 1939, there's a lot of stuff that was not meeting current code requirements. So from the inside, it's going to be completely renovated, more spacious, have all of the modern amenities that residents will find in the new construction.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I have a question.
Yes.
So I know you mentioned the activity centers and the activities that will be going on at the Chalmers, the previous location. Will that be at every location? And if so, what kind of activities? Is there an educational component for that summer, during that summertime? And if so, I guess just a little bit more details on that.
Yes, that's a great question. Every property has programs and services and activities that are available at no cost to the families who live at that respective property. And not only do we, is it a commitment on our part, but it's actually a requirement by the financing mechanism that we use to rebuild the properties through the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And so there's at minimum, programs for youth, programs for seniors, and also for adults. And so while it's not necessarily a cookie cutter, approach at every single property, it's not going to be completely identical because, various families have various needs. We do work hand in hand with our resident council leaders to determine what types of programs and services they would like to see at their respective property. So if you can move to the next slide. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. One slide back. There we go. And this just gives you a little snapshot of, through the renderings, of what the future pathways at Rosewood Courts will look like. So as I mentioned, there is a welcome center that we are partnering up with E4U to help activate. And there's also the commemorative green space that will be a community asset, something that will be available to not only the residents of Rosewood, but also to the neighboring community. And then on the right-hand side, you see the historic preservation component. As I was mentioning, previously, we are restoring the 8 buildings, and we are making sure that the new construction that's going to be right next door to the restored buildings, that they don't stick out like a sore thumb, right? And so we were very intentional with our architect team and our developer partner to ensure that it was a very seamless sort of continuity of the historic component as well as the new construction. And so you can see in the building, the multi-story building, it has that ribbon of lighter colored brick that will complement the original buildings. And the other thing that we were very intentional about is making sure that it was all very walkable and connected, because right now, in the previous public housing property at Rosewood, it was a steep incline from one end of the property to the other. It was about a 30-foot difference, and it wasn't always very easy to maneuver, especially for folks with mobility impairments or even families with young children having to kind of maneuver the property with a stroller. And so we're making it much more walkable. There's going to be a lot of walking paths. And there's also going to be a historic marker component. We were fortunate to receive some grant funding through the Heritage Program through the City of Austin. And so that's going to help us pay for some historic kiosks that will be throughout the walking paths to help tell the story about Rosewood Courts and Emancipation Park. And then on the bottom there, you see a rendering of Prospect Heights, which is the home ownership component over at Rosewood in partnership with Habitat. And next slide, please. Okay, so, and one of the main topics that I wanted to provide you an update on is Santa Rita Courts. This property is along East 2nd Street and Pedernales and Santa Rita Street. So it was built in 1939. As I've mentioned, it's one of the three historic properties that was built. And it has essentially the same challenges that Rosewood and Chalmers Courts experienced. Number one, it's antiquated. We have building systems that are just, you know, simply deteriorating because of the sheer age. And, you know, at the time that they were built, they were not built with central air. And so, well, while families do have air conditioning through window units, you know, if anyone has ever owned a window unit, you know how inefficient those are, and they cost more to operate. The living spaces are also very small. And we have very, very little to no accessibility for persons with disabilities and mobility issues. And you know, these are built of cinder block. So it's really hard for us to make meaningful improvements because we're literally breaking through cinder block to do it and to get access to plumbing repairs and whatnot. So,
hey, Sylvia.
Recognize it's time. It's time to make significant improvements to these buildings.
Yeah, we have a lot. We still have, we just have several more items on the agenda. So do you think you can wrap it up in a few more minutes?
Absolutely, absolutely. So here you see a snapshot of current state of the site map of Santa Rita. And on the right-hand side in green, those are the first phase, and those are the one-story bungalows. I wanted to point those out specifically because when, you know, since it's been more than 50 years since Santa Rita was built, of course over 80 years now, we will be engaging in what's called a Section 106 review process. And that's essentially because it is historic in nature. And so we are going to be reaching out to folks such as yourselves, other stakeholders, and just getting your feedback on what's important in terms of telling the story about the history and legacy of Santa Rita Courts. More than likely, because of the very high cost of doing restoration and preservation, we will not be able to preserve all 11 of the buildings. More than likely, it'll be closer to half of them, maybe around five or so. So I wanted to make you aware about that as well and just get your feedback, get your perspective on the historic component of it. Next slide, please. And just very quickly, I'm sure this comes as no shock to you all. We surveyed our residents who call Santa Rita home and wanted to hear from them. What do they want improved at the property? And you can see that big 41% that was HVAC, which means air conditioning. So no shock there. And other things that they're looking for is, you know, new, bigger bathrooms, renovations, new paint and flooring, washer dryer connections, nicer kitchens, better parking, a playground with a shade, and removed brick walls. So that was also important to them. Next slide, please. So just a quick snapshot in terms of the timeline. right now we're heavily into the planning and design of the new property. And next year is when we are planning to apply for funding to pay for this new property. And then in 2025, if all goes well and we get the funding that we need, construction will be underway. Next slide, please. So how can you help? Well, first and foremost, we would love your support about redeveloping Santa Rita. We would love to get your feedback on any design elements and amenities that you think would be great for the community. And also, spread the word. Let your constituents know that we are planning to redevelop Santa Rita. And please send any feedback that you have at this email address, adelantesantarita@hakanet.org. And we would love to hear from you. Thank you so much. Sorry for taking too long, and we'd love to answer any questions if you have any.
No, thank you so much, Silva. Thank you. I mean, it was a lot of really good information, and I wish we could just spend more time going through all of it, but unfortunately we just have a lot on our agenda. I know people already asked a few questions. We'll just take a couple more questions if anyone has it, or if not, if you think of a question later, you can always feel free to email it as well.
Just maybe as a follow-up on the information that you sent, would be great to understand what was the engagement, the community engagement that happened, how residents help inform what's happening right now as far as the design, the construction.
The survey. They have a survey of
residents.
Right. What were the efforts outside of the survey?
So we have been doing multiple in-person meetings with our Santa Rita residents. So we have been going to all of their monthly resident council meetings, and we've also scheduled multiple just dedicated meetings to keep our residents up to date on the next steps and getting their feedback. We ensure that we have interpreters, whether it's for Spanish, whether it's for Farsi or Arabic or Vietnamese, any type of language need that they have, we ensure that we have the interpreters present to ensure that they're hearing everything, are understanding what they're being told, and that they can feel comfortable in asking us questions. We've also shared this information with the Community Development Commission for the City of Austin recently. We've met with the Holly Neighborhood Group as well to get them up to speed. We plan to also reach out to Councilmember Velasquez and get his office up to date. We've been to the Hillside concert series recently. It was a scorcher, but we were we have folks out there to let the community know. We have a website that has been created to keep everyone up to date on any meeting summaries. And so yeah, we're trying to get the word out as much as possible, and would love your help in spreading the word as well.
Great, thank you.
Okay, well thank you so much for the presentation. And so next.
My pleasure, thank you.
And so the next up, a community briefing from Naomi Delgado and Martha Langford on the Senior Services and Senior Recreation Centers, Austin, for the city.
You should have the presentation on here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm pulling it up.
Jeremy's pulling it up.
Okay.
And he also sent it to commissioners, I think, in the email as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm ready. Let me get me started. Give me this sign, when I've gone back to the
office. Okay, well, sure. And just don't forget to speak up, too, for the microphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
My fellow seniors and I are here to ask you as a commission and individuals to positively advocate for us in our request herein presented. And our request is for a new special use seniors building, because a senior center is for senior use. They're a little bit different than recreation centers. So we currently are a senior program in the Bess Garcia Recreation Center. Okay, so next slide. Okay, Gustavo Gus Garcia Recreation Center is a 20,000 square foot building that sits on 47 acres of park right off Lundberg below what used to be the middle school. Okay. It has after school and teen programs, summer daycare, adults under 55 program, and our senior program is scheduled from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. except in the summer when we do not have programs because it's taken up by all of the teen and school and daycare and other things. Our adult exercise programs are led by this lady behind me, Naomi Delgado, and it's called Senior Size, and it's been 15 years strong. We meet three times a week with the average daily attendance now of 45. Gus Garcia is also a site for Meals on Wheels and Austin Food Pantry monthly distribution, as well as other organizations that take it upon themselves to come from time to time. And we do have quite a, I think it's called Kathy's Kindness has started that just recently.
Is there a senior meal program just for seniors?
It's just Meals on Wheels. Meals on, we have a kitchen, but we're not allowed to cook anything there. Since the pandemic, it has been limited about whether we can even bring stuff from home and that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Although it is becoming a little bit more liberal. Sometimes we have birthday celebrations once a month. But the Meals on Wheels is served in a regular room, smaller than this room, smaller than this room. And so it's really hard for them for people to get in and out of that room because they just bring it in, you know, in carts on wheels.
Sure.
And bring it in and let it go. Okay. If you have questions, just ask me anytime. And if you want me to talk about everything, that's fine. But you also have it. You can read it. So we'll let you do that. Now, next slide. We are getting cramped. And if you look and see, these are the numbers for all the different programs in 2019 before the pandemic, and then you have 2020 and 2021 that was pandemic. And so some of those signs were just closed completely down. Mm-hmm. The only thing that you could get into was the garden and the outside trails and that sort of stuff. And then in 2022, we started building back up. And in 2023, we've gotten a little bit different. And if you look at the youth programs, you'll see that they have started to increase because the totals in 2019 were 540 and the totals in 22 were 464 and now they're 748 because they're having new programs. And we have a really good new director and she has lots of nice, good ideas. And that's important. It's important for those people to be served, especially if you're a District 4, you know what I'm talking about. And the teen programs have increased also. If you'll notice, that's 101 compared with 54 back in 2019. The adult program, and I know this is strange, but the adult program has increased also, and that's people that are not 65 and older. So it says youth and teen program participation has significantly increased. During the summer enrichment programs are on hold. So all we have is senior size three times a week, Meals on Wheels, anytime they want on during the week. And then seniors are through at 1 o'clock, but we do not have any activities in the summer. Now, sometimes, and you'll see that in a minute, I'll draw your attention, but our senior program is back up to around 66. I wanted to tell you that the adults, I go to the senior garden and make sure it's watered every day, and then there's other people that help me too. But I'm there on Sunday mornings and Saturday mornings at 8 in the morning, you know, and there'll be people there, you know, from the district all around, and there'll be, you know, young men with their children, and they're down there playing soccer in the children's soccer area, and they're over on the basketball court that's outside playing pickleball, and all sorts of things like that happens all the time because it's a very well-used park. But that doesn't mean that we have much access to a lot of the different stuff as seniors, and so that's why we're coming. We just want people to advocate for us. Since youth participation is 161% of pre, that means over pandemic attendance, we feel that this center would be even better used and have more access for the youth and the teens if we had a building of our own. So, but we don't want it somewhere else, we want it on that side. Okay, now, these next two pages, if you'll come to the next, if you have questions about that, just interrupt me because I go fast. Okay.
I'm gonna ask you a question real quick because I get what you're asking for. In that same building where the recreation center is at, is there an opportunity to maybe do an expansion?
Well, we've talked about that. And so we
have a bond program.
But we'll get to why we want a building in just a second. Okay. I'm not there yet, okay. If you look at these, at this page and the next page, it's just the council district demographic profiles. And the different percentages of different things. So you have them on your page. If you don't have clear, it's hard to see some of them. You can just go to the demographic profiles on your own computer and get the clear percentages on your own. So we're going to do the next one, District 4 Demographic Profile Facts and Figure Takeaway. And that's, this was my idea, because if you see on the sheet, it's all in percentages. Well, you know, 8% of zero is still zero. So if we say the senior population over 65 is 8% of 94,936 people in District 4, that comes out to 7,595 seniors. Senior immigrant population comes out to 2,430. And we have the immigrants in our district. And I'm not just saying just here and there. Everywhere, all over the globe. Okay, senior population living in poverty, 32%, 7,595. Seniors living low to moderate income is 74%, which is 5,620. So we have a whole lot of low to moderate. We could be, you know, but we're not asking for a grant. But anyway, that would designate the city to be able to have a grant. Okay, senior 65 living alone, or 1,671 seniors. And do you know that the Hispanic population in 2020 in District 4 was 59%? Mm-hmm. Now it's 57 plus 20 in 2021. It's not quite as much.
What group? Mm-hmm. What took those percentages to what group?
Mixed.
Okay,
you're not just Hispanic, but you're Hispanic,
yeah.
Black, or Hispanic, white, or Hispanic, black, white, you know, mm-hmm. or Asian, or whatever. We got all kinds mm-hmm. of
that's
mixtures.
That's the percentage that took two more.
And just recently, I have been counting how many people that we have at the, you can interrupt me whenever,
yeah.
you know. I've been counting the percentages of ethnicities that we have at the exercise, and we average about a third white, a third Hispanic, a third Vietnamese, and then plus other Asians, like so forth. So it's pretty well good. Okay, next one. Oh, it says right here your current data is for that, so you can get that if you need it. Okay, locations of seniors-only centers. And the only three that we have, and there's one other, but we didn't go visit that one. If you look at your picture, District 4 is kind of lavender looking on there. There's a star, and that's where Gus Garcia Center is. Okay, the other three that we have listed as stars are seniors-only centers. And we went and visited, we had a carload of people, and we went and visited the different ones. And the center in, 10 is Lamar.
Oh, District 1?
Mm-hmm.
Is the one you're looking
at? Mm-hmm. See right there? If you look right there, I'm in District 10, right? It's almost in 9. Yeah, it's
like right in the middle almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That one is there.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then Connie Guerrero is in District three, but it's a little bit more than one. You know, it's close to one. And South Austin is down on Manchac in District 5. And if you'll notice where they're at, those centers are all down here. And there's nothing up here for seniors.
Is the South one open? I thought it was closed for renovation. The one on Manchac? Is that senior center open?
Yes. It was when we went.
Okay, that's good.
Unless they get renovated.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
And
it's in use.
Good.
It's well used, yeah. Okay, we're just drawing that out, okay? So we're going to, next slide says currently only three seniors only centers. Do you want to know about each one of those? They're here, you can read it. Those people at home, you can read it just for brevity's sake. They're great centers. They're just not anywhere close to where we are located. All right. Now we're going to go to the next slide. And what the next few slides are going to do are going to compare the rooms that we have in Gus Garcia with the rooms in the other three. So if you have SACC, that's South Austin. If you have CGSAC, that's Connie Guerrero. And if you have LSAC, that's Lamar. Okay. And at Gus Garcia, our main lobby is normally crowded during summer. Only two small round tables available for seating. Picnic shop tables are not senior friendly seating. That just means it's hard to get our legs in and out.
Your back and everything. I'm there.
Good. Under center's lobbies, if you look, they're not the South Austin. I really like the way South Austin is set up. Okay, Lamar's is not particularly great big, but it serves their purposes. Connie Guerrero has more space than this, you guys. Connie Guerrero has, it comes down here and around over here and down like that. But it wasn't easy to put a video on that particular thing. Okay. In Gus Garcia Center for seniors, we have limited game areas. Air hockey tables squeezed between two lobby tables, the ping pong tables stowed away to make room for summer programs. We do have a ping pong that's put in the, what do you call that room?
The aerobics.
The aerobics room. And the Vietnamese gentlemen play it. You don't want to get between them and because they play from way back here. Okay. But the other centers, believe it or not, have separate game and puzzle areas and game rooms. Not just one or two, but a whole bunch. And if you want me to be much quieter and calm, I can go a little slower. But I just want to make that presentation for you. Now, this is the Gus Garcia Gymnasium, and we do have a nice gymnasium because it's used by people from three. I don't guess any of the kids that went swimming this summer were 3 years local. They had probably been 4 or 5. They were so cute. But anyway, they were in the gym while we were exercising, getting changing their clothes. Anyway, this is pictures. These were taken this summer. The longest running senior size class of all PARD centers meets 3 times weekly, and the average daily attendance is 45. The attendee age range from 62 to 97. And we have several gentlemen that fought in World War II that still come to senior centers.
That's okay.
Other centers have multipurpose rooms for their centers, and they don't have gyms, but they have large rooms that can be divided into two different rooms and used for different types of activities, and enlarged for big events. Okay. Now, this says, Gus Garcia room serving youth needs. That's because we don't have any activity centers in the summer. During summer, all senior enrichment classes are put on hold to support daycare and youth programs. And if the people are at home need to ask a question, they can ask. I don't mind stopping. I just want you to see the difference, okay? Other centers, the three that we visited, have art and craft spaces. And at Connie Guerrero and South Austin, they also have kennels. they have an actual quilting machine, and they take it. Now, you're going to say, this is my fault. You look at that picture. Gus Garcia Center has three computers for public use. And it's in the hall, hidden by the people here. If you notice right over here, where the computers are. And here's Austin Public Health was there that day. And you, if you wanted to use the computer, you couldn't have used it anyway. Now.
And they have to meet in the hallway. Yes. There's no space.
No, the public health couldn't even have a room because they were being used for children. So they were out in the hall taking blood pressure and that sort of stuff. Okay. Other centers, technology centers. Now, Lamar didn't have a large, they had one computer set up with the whole process, and I did not take that picture. But this picture is,
that's County.
This is County, and this is South Austin. Okay. And County Guerrero has a large center for technology. Now, if we go on to the next, have I just run you through the slides, Jeremy?
No, we're doing good. Yeah, we're nearing the end. It's good.
When comparing our facility amenities with those of existing senior activity centers, we see the disparity between facilities and spaces available to seniors elsewhere. And we don't mind them having amenities. We would just like to have it somewhere in Northeast Austin, too, and we would like it at Gus Garcia side. Gus Garcia seniors need permanent spaces for senior activities because even in the wintertime when we have those activities, if you are the person leading, you can't leave your stuff there because in the afternoon and evenings it's going to be used for other things. There's not even cabinet space anymore when I teach sewing or whatever it is I do, and Naomi does too. I bring it, you know, in the back seat of my car and take it in and then take it back out. We need full day spaceability for senior community enrichment programs, rooms with secured storage for materials and supplies. And that's very important for the exercise because we have our own weights and we have our own ropes and we have our own balls and Julie, what are those purple things called? Anyway, but they all have to be stored with the other people's storage. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they get used by other people. Senior facilities provide a space to enjoy activities safely and socialize comfortably. Easy access to health and wellness classes, including exercise, which is the best thing for your brain and longevity. Meal and nutrition plans and programs that teach participants how to manage and delay the onset of chronic disease. Most of all, senior activity centers provide a place for friendship and companionship, especially for those 22% of District 4 seniors who live alone. Okay, this is just an aerial view, the next slide, of the whole park.
Okay. A lot of land.
Aerial view, one possible location, but you know, who knows because soil testing, but others could be considered. Now, you're going to ask us some questions. We have the space we need. We have the space, we have the need. That's not in the building, that's on the side. Gus Garcia seniors respectfully request a new senior activity building of approximately 20,000 square feet be constructed on the side of the Gus Garcia Park. Now, when you consider 20,000 square feet and how much it costs per square foot these days, that means that would run somewhere between, because I have checked with people from different places, architects and construction people, and it runs close to $350 a square foot these days. So if you multiply that times 20,000, that's going to be $6.5 million to $8 million. But this is, we haven't even presented, you know, we have presented to the Parks and recreation department, but we're not there. You guys are just third on our list of presentations. But anytime somebody brings up Gus Garcia and seniors need space, you say, yeah, they really need space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we really need y'all to advocate for it, because from 183, this is my mantle that I always tell everybody, from 183 all the way to the city limits, east of 35, west of Dessau, Gus Garcia is the only rec center, and we're represented by district, city council district 1, 4, and 7. And not any of those have tried to improve our area. Everybody has heard of Runberg. Well, we're right off of Runberg. Mm-hmm. But just because it's gotten a name of some kind or another doesn't mean that the needs are not there. We have a lot of needs, and she asked, you know, about adding to the center. One of the things that we want our own center, our own building, is because of the fact that Gus Garcia is a cooling center. It's a warming center, and it's after school, and they have programs for the youth. And any time that if we extend it, the room that we have would not be ours.
Services will be disrupted again.
Yes, it'd be disrupted again. We would not be able to have our storage, our, you know, everything else. So it would be, it'd be just like what we are now, in just another space. But the fact that we've got the property, we've 47 acres. It took us 30 years to get that center. That neighborhood is 50, 60 years old, and that's, you know, they told us it was going to be a designated park area. Took us 30 years to get that center. It took us about 15 years by the time they built it. It's 15 years old now. And we really need for y'all to advocate for us to try to get us a building, because our senior group is really growing today.
Since you guys are Hispanic Commission, my niece got this for me, and it's not in the demographics. It was under a personal demographic person at the city of Austin.
The demographer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, if you will notice here, this is 2010, and this big pie check right here is whites, and this is Hispanics, blacks, Asians, and others. In 2020, Hispanic had grown a little bit, and the whites, of course, are getting smaller. And you've got Asians have grown, blacks haven't, but two or more races has, and other races too. So when you need, just go to your computers and get your,
well,
your back.
First of all, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you for letting us.
No, and thanks for all the work that you're doing to speak up. I know as a commissioner, we're committed to help you. I think what would be helpful for us is to know how we can support you. I don't know if it's through recommendation,
you.
Something, but I
recommend it to the city council.
Yeah.
We're going to start working towards getting Councilman Vela already knows.
Oh, great.
Can we make a motion to don't we send stuff to departments, like a resolution? What is it, y'all? I'm sorry.
A recommendation.
What?
So the formal action that the commission can take is to submit a recommendation to city council. You can also request a staff briefing from the Parks and Recreation Department on this issue, so that you could speak to the leaders in that department directly about senior services at large, and then of course this issue.
I do have to say that I used to be over Gus Garcia Recreation Center. I would say that the seniors used to buy their own equipment. They would bring their own snacks, and it's always been a struggle to make sure that they felt loved and welcomed, and I think we've gotten far, but there's always been a large need, at least for the past 10 years, to make sure that there is unique spaces that are dynamic and diverse to meet the needs of seniors. I will say that the acoustics at that recreation center is so horrible, and so even for the seniors to hear each other in conversation was difficult. you know, putting them in what used to be the old computer room, I think was offensive. You know, I just know the level of work that you all have done, and I am just really happy that you are here advocating not just for yourselves, but for all the different seniors who come daily, y'all. They come daily, and they're building bonds with each other, and they're doing life. And so I just appreciate your advocacy.
Is this
Sharon
Aguilar?
It is. I'm B-Phil now.
Yes, she advocated a lot for us, and we really appreciated when she was taking the place while we had a supervisor that was ill, and she did so much for us. We were disappointed that she couldn't be there for us always, but thank you. We really needed you to say that.
Yeah, and so I don't know if there's a resolution that, I'd love to talk about what that would look like,
yeah.
And maybe once we get to that place, I'd like to make a motion and see if we can get any support moving for that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to thank you guys just for letting us talk, letting us express what we have, what we need. But a senior in our area, and the way that I have seen this thing go for the last 35 years since we started, is that we're not ready to go to the grave. We can still give. And we have professors, we have professional people. Gus Garcia told me one time, he said, as long as you're breathing, and as long as you can produce, and we can talk to young people, we can still do things. And I've learned this from experience. One of the most satisfying things that I see in seniors over 90 or over 80 is we have a couple of seniors, World War II veterans, very few left. And I'm a veteran myself, but he's 97 years old, he can barely walk, but he walks, and he sets up a fork, a spoon, a knife, and a little napkin with the flour right down the table. For people to come and eat, and then you see people rolling in, the parents rolling over at their daughters, or rolling in their mother or their dad so they can have that one meal. I don't know if that's the only meal they get hot, whatever. But walking that whole district, myself, delivering newsletters or whatever, I have learned to appreciate just life itself. We're full of what you call them in Spanish, dolencias. You know, get them all. Everybody wants one coming, okay? That's the old school of alcohol, okay? But at the same time, it's a lot of fun seeing these people produce. We can still help. We can do anything. But we never want to stop learning. But we can help in community services, like for instance, a lot of people go to a center and they want to find out things. Vaccinations, how to take care of their pets, what resources there are, classes on how to do a end of life wills and things like that. We just don't have the room to exercise that. So we're just asking for help, that's all.
And we don't have libraries in that area. We don't have medical facilities of any kind. We've just been pretty much ignored by the city. And it's kind of sad because we have a lot of seniors that live alone. They would love to be able to stay, linger a little longer, and visit with their friends because they're going home to an empty house. mm-hmm. you know, just themselves. And we noticed, and we know the senior centers are open 8:30 to 4:30. And they have movies, if you want to watch movies, games, just socializing. And as we get older, we're all in our 80s, and as we get older, we want to, you know, socialize. You know, our friends are growing little by little, so the ones that we do meet at the rec center, you know, we want to socialize, and that's very important at a senior activity center. And I appreciate y'all
thank you.
Listening
no,
to us.
Thank you all.
Thank you,
thank you so much.
Yes.
Take care, everybody. Hi. Jeremy?
Oh. Yes.
Sorry, can we get their, can you share their contact
sure.
information with us?
Yes, absolutely. They were, they're copied on one of the messages, but I'll make sure in my follow-up to share the emails that I have listed for them, for sure.
Thank you so much.
And I'll make sure to contact y'all the next time that they put a recommendation on the agenda.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have
thank
a good
you.
Evening.
Bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
All
right.
So next up, we have a staff briefing from PARD on the MAC phase two update. Heidi and Christina.
I think Heidi might be muted. This is Christina Vies. She will be giving the presentation, and I'm here for backup if y'all have any PARD-related questions. Thank you.
All right. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having us come back. I think the last time we were here was in January. I'm here with Christina that you just met. My name is Heidi C. I'm actually with Capital Delivery Services Department, a newly formed department that was formerly Public Works. So we are the managing department for this phase two improvement for the Mexican American Cultural Center. So as I said, the last time we were here was in January, so it's been a little while. We wanted to brief you on some milestones that's happened and wanted to let you know we are in the construction document permitting, bidding, and negotiation phase right now, and that the construction documents are being are broken up in two packages, one being the site and the second being the building. This allows us to get started with the project sooner, and the site development permit was actually submitted for an application back July of last year. We just got our site development permit as of the 26th of July, so we're really excited about that. This is a huge milestone for us. Following that, we were able to submit the central plant building permit, which is the one singular building, if you're familiar with the site, that's in the middle of the parking lot. It controls our HVAC for the whole facility, so we just got that permit just yesterday. So we're on our way to moving some dirt. Austin Energy, who is the managing department of that chill water pipe extension project, this is all related to the HVAC or the AC for the campus, will start their work in the parking lot. And if you're there recently or around the area, I know we're already fenced off, but you'll see a backhoe in place. They had a kickoff meeting back in March of this year. And so they've begun mobilizing by putting up their construction fence. Now they're able to start that chill water pipe extension that that will require some trenching in the parking lot to bring that pipe to connect from the River Street alley to our mechanical room or the central plant building I just mentioned. They have received their right-of-way permit. However, I was just informed that because of congestion of other buildings, a long rainy area district, that is being held, and so they'll start work first on the parking lot. As I said, that first package, which is the site and infrastructure, we had, the bidding process back in March with the building package following and having a non-mandatory pre-proposal meeting in May. And it's staggered deliberately, like I said, so that we can get the site going ahead of the building construction. This just saves us time and gets us, you know, moving dirt early. Both meetings were well attended, with small minority and women-owned business. Outreach was conducted by the CMARS consultant, Pink. And if you know Pink, it is the owner of Pink is Bobby Garza Hernandez. She was formerly a executive assistant to Gus Garcia Mayor, past Gus Garcia Mayor. And she is at the heart of our community outreach. So she is continuing with our project. And this year, Park and Recreation Department has added $5 million to the project budget to mitigate the funding gap that we were seeing back probably late last year. That $5 million is from parkland dedication fees, or PLD, through an ordinance supported by residential development. These PLD funds may be utilized towards recreation features, which are permanent improvements to an existing park. The project will now include much of the proposed renovation and auditorium, and also a larger re-roofing project. Two requests for council's approval because of this additional funding. We had to go to council on June 8th, and one of the two RCA authorized negotiation and execution of amendment to professional services. We can scroll that, my presentation to the, yeah, that's right, right, to, whoops, at the very bottom of the first page. So two of the council's, like, the first RCA was amendment to the professional service agreement, which is basically consulting services. And the second request for council approval was for the negotiation and authorization to execute an amendment to the construction manager at risk, or the GC that we have already selected. That's just to up their authority. As far as art and places, we have the Tejano Trails Perez Roma sculpture that was on site. That had to be moved, dismantled, and placed in storage in February in advance of our construction beginning. So we wanted to put that away, we wanted to bring that back out, but we wanted to keep it safe. The La Mujer mural unveiling was on April 29th of this year, and that's also right now on the site, and it's outside our construction fence for right now, but we will have to enclose it. But we wanted to make sure it gets as much viewing as it possibly can. The AIPP perspectives for our project phase two was developed, and a call for artists was released back in May of this year. I believe it's already closed, but I think some evaluation in that process is ongoing right now. I will bring you an update as soon as I hear from them. Waterloo Greenway, the Confluence project, which is an adjacent project, the general contractor for that project was selected and has already started clearing and grubbing the site using our access. This was always an agreement between PARD, and it was also, there was a memo to the MAC advisory board that there's an agreement for access for that Waterloo Greenway project. They have completed that clearing and grubbing task as of the end of June. Sustainable design, with respect to our project, we're still tracking LEED 4.0 building design and construction at silver level. and that is leadership in energy and environmental design. That's what LEED stands for. And Austin Energy Green Building 3-star, we're tracking both certification. And after many deliberations and review of attendance records for the Community Communication Forum, this was our outreach as we were leading design, wanted to keep the community in touch. So there was this forum, we formed a forum that we call Community Communication Forum. And we had held it for, I believe, I might be wrong, maybe 9 months, maybe less than that. And our attendance records were really, really dropping with two or three members still coming to the meetings. So we decided that we're gonna primarily discontinue the CCF and go and continue with our monthly digital updates to the community. And this announcement was made to the last CCF meeting on May 18th. The communications continues between the city departments of the public and private developments and the Trail Conservancy to coordinate minor and temporary disruptions to the trails and anything at Lady Bird Lake. The timeline still remains where groundbreaking happened in, December 10th of last year. Design concluded December of last year. Construction documentation permitting began January and still ongoing because we're trying to finish package two. Site construction now we can say will start this month, and construction substantial completion where the building gets turned over back to PARB to put furniture and all our IT stuff back in will be spring of 2025. And we hope to see everyone at the grand opening in the summer of 2025. So with that, I will open it up for questions. Sorry I blew that through that very quickly, but I know this is a very long meeting for some of you guys, and I didn't want to belabor my update, but I am free to take on any questions you guys have. Oh, nice picture at the end. That was the third page. If we can throw that back up.
Commissioner
May? This question. Is the rendering of our concept design.
This is Commissioner Lisa May. I have a question for you. Do y'all need additional funding?
We always welcome additional funding. Like I said, we're in the process of going through our bids for the second package. And there is a funding gap, but we're trying to identify that because we're validating the bids right now to be sure that there was what was bidded out matched up with our specifications.
So but, this, as a follow-up, at this point then, you don't have an identified amount to meet that gap?
Right now, initially, when the bids came in, we know that it started off at $5 million. There's a funding gap of $5 million between what is designed, what you're seeing here, what we were getting in bids. We're in the process of validating that and going through, do what they're submitting match what we have. So right now, because it's so, we're still kind of in the early stages, we're saying $5 million is the gap right now, but it's not a star, it's not a number that we have fully validated.
Thank you.
Commissioners, have any other questions? And if you're holding up your hand, I can't see you, just go ahead and speak up if you have a question. Oh, okay, there. All right, well, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you, and let us know if you have any other questions that come up. You can always let Jeremy know, and he will email either myself or Christina. Thank you for having us this evening. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right. And so next up on the agenda, there's two other staff briefings, the I-35 cap and stitch, and then the Economic Development Department for the Elevate program and the hot taxes. Those are going to be next month. Because I know we canceled our meeting last week, and with it being rescheduled, we weren't able to have them come back. And so it'll be on the agenda for the following month. And then, so now discussion and action items. And I know Commissioner May, you had asked about making sure we get to a specific item.
Yes, I was just wondering, Commissioners, with all due respect and time, it seems like item 10 on our agenda under discussion and action items is rather important. I mean, everything's important, but that one in particular, I believe, is rather important. It has been, it's been in the newspaper. It sort of took on a bit of a controversial notation to it. And from my perspective, I just want to make sure that we had enough time to discuss it and kind of thoroughly go through it. So my request respectfully is if y'all would be willing to allow item 10 to be moved up to item number 7 and then just move the agenda just down accordingly, if you would approve doing that, if you would entertain that.
All right, so looking at the agenda, we have for number 8, discussion and possible action to approve a recommendation to City Council regarding the City of Austin's partnership with Texas State. And so I know we have some people on here to help us answer any questions. So we'll go to number 8 and then number 10, just to make sure that we get that.
So 8 becomes 7?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay. So 8 is 7 and then 10
will be
8?
8, yes.
8. And then everything else will fall under?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And so I know last meeting, we had Susana from Codet and talked to us about DPS officers here in Austin, and everything kind of moved really quickly. DPS coming back to Austin, and then before we could, you know, do a recommendation, then it was they no longer have that partnership. But since it's, you know, DPS, they're still able to come into Austin. And so I know Governor Abbott did have officers come in. And so do we have any questions as regarding like what recommendation or possible recommendation we could make? I know I don't have anything like drafted up for this specific item, just since everything's kind of moved and shifted.
We could also take this moment to allow Peter Freeman from the APD's Office of the Community Liaison. I know you're here to join us. Thank you so much for sharing your time. I don't know if you wanted to introduce yourself. I know you can't speak directly on the issue, but you're here to collect questions. So I just wanted to offer you an opportunity to say hello and introduce yourself.
Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. I'm Peter Freeman. I work with APD Office of Community Liaison. And this evening, I'm here to take any questions, concerns, recommendations that you may have back to my chain of command so that they can stay apprised of what's going on in your minds and make decisions accordingly.
Thank you again so much for being here and for offering your time. I know that was a request from commissioners from our last meeting, was trying to get representation from APD to be present to answer questions or at least collect questions. So thank you again for being here. And I'll open it back to the floor to the commissioners for any discussion or any questions that you want to bring up to the chain of command regarding the specific issue.
My name is Craig Smith, and I am the executive lieutenant as well. Sorry, I'm traveling right now, so I can't turn my camera on. But I work directly for the chief, so I'm also here to assist Peter in the questioning.
All Commissioner Silva? No, go ahead, Commissioner Silva.
Okay. I was just curious if we could get an update on, because I know that the partnership between Austin and DPS ended, but then Abbott sent more DPS here anyway, and I haven't really heard much about that since that happened. Is that increased level of DPS still here in Austin, or if we could just get kind of a status update, that would be useful for me.
Okay, hey Peter, I'll take this one. So yes, so actually when the partnership ended, when Mayor Watson and CM Garza ended the partnership, that's when Governor Abbott said he was going to increase the number of DPS troopers that were here from 100 to 130. So APD used to meet with DPS leadership every Sunday to go over how, you know, what the plans were that they put in place for that week. Once Mayor Watson and CM Garza ended that relationship, we no longer meet with them every Sunday for their briefing, because every Sunday a new group of troopers would come in and they would get their marching orders from APD of what they were going to do. Well, once that relationship partnership ended, then they no longer, APD is no longer meeting with them every Sunday. So yes, as of today, there's still 130 troopers in the city of Austin working, which is 30 more than there had been previously.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any indication as to, I know that all, this is very in flux, but is there any indication as to how long we can expect DPS to remain in Austin?
So when we were meeting every Sunday and having that conversation, Mayor Watson wanted it to be until APD staffing was adequate. We are currently down 350 officers. So he wanted that partnership to be here as long as possible, as long as they're going to be here. Once that partnership was ended and it is no longer in our control, meaning Mayor Watson and CM Garza, they're no longer advising, we have no idea. So Abbott has said, and Mayor Watson has said, is their state police. And they could be here as long as they want. So we no longer we don't have that partnership meeting every Sunday, so we don't know. So that's a long-winded answer to tell you, we have no idea. They could stop tomorrow or they could go another year. We have no idea.
I have a question, and I missed the presentation from Poder. But so what is the difference between DPS and APD, like in terms of their roles, is there any difference in what they are being tasked with?
So APD, we are local police. We are city cops. Our jurisdiction is the city of Austin. So there's like Travis County. There's the sheriffs. They manage the districts outside of Austin. So state troopers, they manage the entire state. So when they came in here, their role as troopers were to drive down violent crime, which is what they do is by making traffic stops. So their predominant role was to help with traffic stops, taking collisions, because that's what they mainly do is traffic stops and collisions, because most cities will have local police officers wherever they are in the state, or they'll have sheriffs that will take care of like the 911 calls per se. Troopers really aren't 911 call takers. They're, unless that county just doesn't have sheriffs, which is, that's very, very rare. So their role was to help reduce violent crime by making traffic stops and helping helping APD so that they can get off. So you've seen the street takeovers, like we had a couple incidents this past weekend. So their role was to go there and to mitigate violent crime. So that's kind of their role that they've been in. But again, without us meeting every Sunday, what they are doing, we don't exactly know.
Okay.
What we're told that they're doing is they're in the high crime areas where people call 911 the most, and that's where they're going to be at mostly.
Commissioner Castaneda, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. So in terms of the data of like the number of violent crimes that are being addressed and what DPS is working on specifically, are we still getting those numbers? I guess I don't know how that used to work, but I'd be interested in the data.
You mean the data since the partnership ended?
Yes.
I think we are still getting it. I am not 100% sure on how that's working. Due to the we're no longer meeting. So I'm not exactly sure. So I don't want to give you false information or wrong or bad information. So post partnership ending, I'm not exactly sure if they are sharing the data as like how we would with APD. So I can find out if we are, and then I can get back to you if you put your contact information in the call or in the text.
Yeah, I would love to have that information. I don't know if other commissioners would as well. But yeah, thank you for looking too.
And just for the record, you can send any information to me, and I can make sure that it gets forwarded to all the commissioners without breaking a walking quorum.
Okay, I can do that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner Maldonado? Oh, you're on mute, I think. Yeah, we can't hear you.
So I know that you mentioned that we're down APD 350 officers. And aside from the oversight and the communication that you guys were having previously, with 130 troopers, is that helping with the city crime? I don't know if I can even ask that, like, is it helping alleviate some of, because we were down, or we are down, officers for the city?
Yes, yeah, so I have a story because I have to, I respond to a lot of emails for Chief, and there was a guy that he's a business owner in Southwest Austin off Slaughter and in Brody, and I live south, so I frequent his business actually, and some stuff was stolen out of his business, and he called 911 and they told him that, hey, APD is not responding. They'll make the report over the phone. They'll make contact with him in like 3 days. He was emailing Chief because he still hadn't been contacted. So I told him that I hate to hear that because when I was patrolling, and Peter was working as well, so when I was patrolling 15, 16 years ago, we responded to everything. We didn't like not go out to a burglary call. Of course we went out to burglary calls. So what DPS is doing is they're able to free us up so that way we can take, so those collisions that take a long time, or the traffic stops, the collisions, you have to wait for wreckers, they're just time consuming. So those things that they can free us up because they're not 911 call takers, that's what they would do. So so when they were here, they were dropping crime or dropping call times drastically, because we were able, they were coming and they could take the calls from us, like the when they're sitting on waiting on a record, and then we could go, we as an APD could go take the 911 call. So yes, they were helping drastically. Because remember, if you're showing up with, you know, 20 cops in a district, you're now putting another 15 in the district, so now you have 35 in the area instead of just 20 APD cops. So they were helping with call times tremendously.
And just to add another question, that I'm sorry, I don't want to, I saw Sharon, I know you raised your hand, but I just, and just to confirm, just because you, I mean, obviously, you know, we kind of see a lot of different things, and just to, what you just said is, I think, what I'm curious on as well, they are helping with just the traffic stops and collisions so that APD is monitoring the city crime.
Correct. They are not answering 911 calls. That's still gotcha. APD. They're freeing us up where they're doing the other things that they can, like the street takeover this weekend. They will respond to those so that way we could continue to focus on 911 calls. Those were 911 calls, but those were things that they could do because it's more traffic oriented. So, you know, there was a couple of traffic fatalities this weekend. So they're able to handle those because that's a lot of what they do every single day is take traffic collisions and traffic fatalities and pull people over. That's mainly what they do. They're not 911 call takers per se.
Commissioner
Vigil?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, one of the things. So thank you all for your service. My brother is in law enforcement, so I do have a special place in my heart for that. Hey, buddy, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. You know, but what we did hear from Poder was that there was over-policing. We did hear that it was targeted policing. And so I just sort of would like just a response to that. Additionally, I think that the concern was that when, you know, and historically, when you add over policing to a community that has already been harmed, has had trauma with law enforcement, always not a lot of good things sort of, you know, come from that. And so if you can help us sort of understand a little bit about sort of that feeling that Poder expressed on behalf of the community, that would be great.
Yes, absolutely. So obviously, Austin has always been a very, very safe city. And in the past couple of years, you have seen an uptick in violent crimes, specifically murders, where we would average 25 murders and we were having about 80 to 90 murders a year. So violent crime was increasing tremendously, and we were getting a reduction in officers. Like I told you, now we're down 350 officers. So we can't be as proactive as we want to help the community and target violent offenders. We just don't have the manpower to do it. So DPS was brought in, and when we looked at where we wanted them, we wanted to put them in the communities that needed them the most, which was the one that we're calling 911 the most. So we call those hotspots. So where they were calling 911 the most, people saying, hey, I need 911 right now. Right, so the average person doesn't call 911 every day, right? You call it depending, but about 9 to 11 times in your entire life is what the average person calls 911. It's their worst day, right? They're calling because I don't know what to do. Please, somebody that's law enforcement, come help.
Craig, we may have lost you. Can you hear us?
Yeah, do you hear me?
Oh, there we go. Now we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. So we were trying to figure out a way to best help the community. So the areas that call 911 the most was the area that they were put into. So they and the DPS. So they were put into the area, which was Runberg, the area that you saw in the news, Runberg, East Austin, where the community called 911 the most. So after a couple weeks, you saw exactly what you were talking about, where they're saying, hey, where there's too many cops here, troopers, we're getting over-policed. We don't want them here because they're over-policing us, right? So in those specific areas, there's a 58% drop in crime. So if we listen to the community and say, hey, what we're gonna do is we're gonna spread them out. We're no longer gonna be in this specific area. We're gonna move into Northwest Austin and Southwest Austin, right? So that's where they move after the first part of their after the community saying, hey, we feel over-policed. So that's why they were moved to Northwest and Southwest Austin. Well, there's an issue down at the border, so they have to go down there and handle that because, again, they're state police, so they go where they're needed the most. So after being gone for several weeks, they came back and started it back up. And then shortly after is when Mayor Watson and CM Garza decided to end the partnership. So they were looking at things holistically and where are the 911 calls the most. That was the initial where they were looking at putting them initially. But then the community was like, no, we don't want them here as much, so that's where they were moved to different areas.
Got it. And then, I'm sorry, this, you know, although there's always work to do, I think that APD has done a lot of work working with Joyce James and, you know, the police oversight department, where we transformed training for APD. What type of measures did APD or the city take to make sure that whoever we contract with also has the same level of training and standards when it comes to equity, social justice, you know, sort of the level of training that APD now has to go through?
I guess, are you saying contracted? I guess, or the partnership,
I'm sorry, or the partnership, right? So if you're gonna partner with someone, how do we know that they're trained in the way that we want them to work with the community? Or what training do we offer them before we say yes, you know, come into our community?
Okay, so remember, APD did not start that relationship. Because usually another agency doesn't really want another, unless it's dire times, another agency is going to call in for assistance, right? So APD wasn't the one that initiated the outreach. That was Mayor Watson that reached out for assistance, trying to help, you know, get the community, because the community was saying, hey, I'm not feeling safe. So DPS does have, we're all the Texas Commission of Law Enforcement Officers. Like, every single police officer in the state of Texas has to go through what's called TECOL. So there are mandatory training for de-escalation. There's mandatory equity training. There is mandatory training that we all have to go through. Obviously, like you just mentioned, we have oversight, which they don't. We have, Joyce James. We have a lot of partnerships that we do with the community because we're, as in the Austin Police Department. So they don't necessarily have that training because we're local. Remember, they're state. So they don't necessarily have that. But I will tell you that we as an APD, like you mentioned, we do meet every single month with the Black faith pastors. And DPS has said they want to be involved in that. And they are meeting with us on, we meet every the last Tuesday of the month. So DBS is involved in that. So we do like the TIPACOP events, the LETR, the Law Enforcement Torch Run, the Special Needs Community. We go out there with them, and they're involved in that as well. So they have sort of moved into embracing the community while they're here as well. For Juneteenth, they partnered in the Juneteenth events as well. Things that we just do naturally. Since they've been here, they have been participating in those events. But as far as like doing the training that you're talking about, that's not mandatory. That's something that APD does specifically for APD officers.
Commissioner Rodriguez?
No, we can't hear you very well.
It's
we
like
hear
really
you faintly.
Low, yeah.
Have you tried just speaking up a little bit louder or closer to the computer?
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better.
Okay.
If I can, maybe you can type better.
For this one, she might be able to, actually, because we're not at City Hall.
If
do you want to type your...
You were sounding a little bit louder. If you want to talk and see if we can...
Yeah, do you want to... I think we were hearing you a little bit.
Sorry about that.
That's a lot better.
Much
yeah,
better, much better.
My question is to Mr. Freeman. Mr. Freeman, as the community liaison, obviously we've been having a conversation about the different things we've heard from the community and why the relationship happened and not happened. My question for you is, what is your office doing to address some of the, you know, concerns that were expressed by Poder and other community organizations in regards to the relationship and how this came about, and also the ongoing concerns?
In keeping with what my instructions from my supervisor, I can convey questions to her, and I can command, but I can't make any statements or assertions about what has or hasn't been done. I will say that it's something that I myself have not been involved in.
and being mindful of the time, what would be helpful is maybe to continue bringing to them every, I don't know, 2-3 months to report back on what they're learning. I know that what you're learning right now is limited because that Sunday meeting is not happening, but I think, you know, you're the only way that we can know what's happening and how DPS is operating. So we'll appreciate, and maybe that's something that we can have on the agenda, just 15 minutes.
Basis.
Yeah, quarterly basis, a report back. Because that's true, you're the only liaison that can tell us what's happening. And then we can bring any concerns that we're hearing from our districts, from the people that live in our districts.
It definitely would be great to have you all come back. And I know, like Commissioner Nettie said, we're short on time. But one question I had was the 911 calls that Craig mentioned. When you said like they sent the officers where they had the highest number of 911 calls, was it like specific types of 911 calls that y'all were looking at, or just like in general 911 calls?
No, specifically violent crime, because that's what we're trying to focus on, is bring down. That's what every city is trying to do, right, is to bring down violent crime, because that's what affects our community the most, is violent crimes. That's where I think Sarah talked about that trauma, right? So the issue is to try to help people with violent crime. So that specifically is what they were targeting, is how can we bring down violent crime.
And I know, I mean, violent crime is like kind of a broad term for me, I feel like, because people can kind of say different things are violent crime. And so I guess for me, it's like, what are those violent crimes specifically that you all were looking at?
Violent crime is what we consider when there's a person that's like assaulted,
okay.
Right? So this is not simple assault. These are like robberies. These are aggravated robberies. Okay. These are homicide. These are aggravated assaults. So these are crimes where a person is physically assaulted. So these aren't property crimes like your tire is busted out. These are what we would call violent crime, which is like penal code offenses. So felony offenses.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then my last question is, I feel like lately I've heard more about car chases, like DPS started, you know, trying to pull someone over and then like a car, it was initiated. And I know it seems to me like pretty dangerous as far as like if they're going 90 miles an hour chasing a vehicle. And I don't know if you all know, but like what sets that to that level? Or like, is there a specific, reason to go into a car chase versus not to go into a car chase? Because like I said, I feel like I've heard more about car chases than I did in the past, and I don't know if they're just reporting them more or if it's something that's actually increased since DPS has been here.
Yes, thank you for that. So I think Sharon brought that up earlier as well. So, and not car chases, but Every place has different policies. So APD, Austin Police Chasing, we call them vehicle pursuit policies. Ours is very strict on what we can chase for. Because like you stated, vehicle pursuits are extremely dangerous, not just for the person that's running, but for the officer and for the community, right? So there's three victims that could potentially be for vehicle chases. So our policy is extremely robust. That's why you never hear about it, because like APD rarely chases unless it's a violent encounter, right? And we talked about violent encounter. Somebody was robbed, there was a shooting, something like that. Though that's when APD chases, or pursuits. We have pursuits. We call them vehicle pursuits. Well, troopers, their policy is different than ours. They can chase for different things. So where we can't chase for a traffic offense, for you speeding or you not using your turn signal, or for you doing, you know, just a traffic violation, they can't, right? They have different policies than what we do. So that's why you've heard about it a lot more recently, is because their policy is completely different than ours, what we chase for, what they chase for. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that's what I was wondering, like what the policy is, because yeah, I feel like I hadn't really seen a lot about car pursuits or anything like that until DPS came into Austin with this partnership, and then since it's ended, there's still been another one, like on Metropolis, I think was the most recent one, and it just seems very dangerous, like the cost benefit to me for that type of thing. So I'm glad to hear that y'all have like a really good, robust vehicle pursuit policy, but it definitely seems like DPS being here doing that, it can potentially be really dangerous, especially in those communities that they're, you know, in, people walking around on the sidewalks, going to, you know, stores, bus stops, you know, daycare, school, like, yeah. But no, thank you for clearing that up, Craig. Right.
So for our policy, like we have to know like time of day, we have to know the weather, we have to know the location. So we're, and again, I tried to explain about city, local, and state earlier. Usually, for the most part, the troopers are on highways, and that's where they're normally chased because that's their jurisdiction most of the time. So they're not in communities per se. So yes, yeah, so that's why our policy. Extremely robust, where you rarely will see chases just because they are inherently dangerous, right? So if you look at the Officer Down Memorial page, which is where every single officer that dies in the country is listed, you'll see a lot of them are for pursuits. So APDs just realize how inherently dangerous they are. So yeah, ours is completely different than troopers.
All right, well, thank you so much. We'll definitely be in touch with having y'all like come back to the commission meeting, because I know it's an ongoing thing and different, you know, stuff comes up. So thank you so much for y'all for being here and answering these questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will email Jeremy and get that answer for you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else for me or?
We're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. And so then next we'll go to discussion regarding the interim city manager's proposed budget for fiscal year 23-24, with possible action to approve a recommendation to city council regarding the impending changes to the equity office, civil rights office, small and minority business resources office, sustainability and resilience office. And so I'm sure most of you have seen or heard that in the new proposed budget, the equity office, the civil rights office, and the small and minority business resources would become a new office of civil and business equity. And it was something that was made without any sort of community input or even really input from those departments. And so I know there's been some people have had discussions about this. We discussed it at the Joint Inclusion Committee meeting last week. And then Commissioner Nettie did put together a recommendation, which ultimately says we recommend that the equity office remain its own independent office. And so Commissioner Nettie?
Yeah, Commissioner Nettie, thank you for that. I honestly don't know if we can put forth a recommendation right now, just given the timeline, so we might have to kind of shift whatever action we want to take. I think maybe first step is just to open the conversation for anyone who has any questions. On that, we also have the staff.
I can't give an official briefing, but if there are questions.
Would you identify yourself? I don't know.
Yes, I'm Amanda Hasso, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm the interim equity officer for
So maybe it's opening up for any questions, comments, concerns. Do people want to
say? What was the, why can't we use what you created?
Oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, we can use that or we can take other actions, depending on where we land.
I'm new, it's kind of a loss, and I'm sorry to make people repeat it,
but I think I've only been two meetings. The last one meeting we did the budget, which was pretty thick, and I don't even recall this this item being in there. I went straight to numbers.
Okay, so this is something that was completely like out of the blue that the interim city manager proposed when he came out with his proposed budget. So like we did all the recommendations that we submitted to the budget office, and then those get sent to departments. And then out of all of that, then the interim city manager creates the proposed budget. Then they roll out that proposed budget. Council has different sessions, listening sessions. And this is still like an opportunity to sway where the what should happen with that budget. And so it wasn't a recommendation or anything that came out of any of the commissions as far as this proposal of having these three offices become one new office. And so it wasn't a recommendation made from like us or any of the other commissions. It was something that the interim city manager put in the proposed budget for fiscal year 23-24. And so when people saw that proposed budget and saw that these offices were being moved into one office, there were concerns that, well, civics and business equity isn't really what the equity office has been doing. You know, it changes, it doesn't seem like what those offices
are. The changes happening under an organizational chart or physically removing people?
So it's the organizational chart, but y'all are moving or not any?
So in the budget, there is one proposed thing. The city, you don't think we can?
I have the recording catcher.
Hey everyone, this is Amanda. So the budget was released July 19th in a presentation, and then just yesterday, interim city manager Garza released a memo that clarified some of the things around the civic, and well, I think they changed the name now to community and business equity department that's been proposed. And in that memo, kind of outlined that the equity office would be staying in its location. We are maintaining our budget and our staffing levels. Of course, though, everyone's budgets would be consolidated, but the way they kind of line itemed everything out, the equity office's budget would remain intact. But physically, our location would not be changing. I don't know
so
if that's
just
what you're asking.
It's more like, to some extent, it's an org change to some extent, because you're still maintaining your budget, you're still maintaining your independence, I'm assuming, to some extent.
I think that's debatable, because in the memo, they did kind of outline that our mission and goals would be expanded, so it's kind of vague. So I don't know. It sounds like there's a focus on business equity, which we're part of conversations in a lot of ways. Our office acts as a consultant to all of the departments in the city, and we've been part of like procurement processes and things like that, or like looking at our procurement and how well or not well we're doing in terms of serving communities of color. But in terms of aligning ourselves with federal compliance around that, or enforcement of civil rights, anti-discrimination laws, and things like that, that's not what we do. So our missions are different, and the services we provide are very different, and we wouldn't be reporting to an assistant city manager anymore. At this time, we report directly to the city manager's office. In this new structure, we would have a director that we would, so a new level of administrative bureaucracy. So we'd report to a director, and that director would then report to an assistant city manager.
Would there still be, is there still a chief So that was my question. Is there still a chief equity officer?
In the memo, it said that the officers would remain. I'm not entirely sure.
Is there a director?
Yeah, I don't know, because there would be the officers would then be reporting to a director, so I'm not exactly sure like how that.
When they had started the whole process for hiring, and then they stopped too, so that was.
I've been asking, where the heck are we?
It's been officially.
I've been smelling this. We're like, come on, you don't hire for a reason, right? I mean,
how long have you been vacant? Has it been vacant?
For a year.
For a year.
I mean,
for a year?
A year.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
No, I mean, they literally had started. They called, they already had a
interviews
consultant.
That happened.
I spoke with them. They did interviews. And then people just didn't hear anymore.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's,
so, I mean,
it's officially paused.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
Well, and forgive me, but you mentioned something, and I was just trying going back to our. One of our agendas or how it's posted. The creation of Hispanic Latino quality of life, and I know it's more than that, but the whole thing.
Yeah.
But are we were we sanctioned by an ordinance? Yes?
Y'all are written into city code. Y'all
are
exist.
City code.
Yeah.
Is that the same strength as an ordinance?
I believe they would have different applications.
Sure.
But I'm not entirely sure the difference between an ordinance and then
we are
city.
In code.
We are in code, though.
So that kind of legitimizes our role.
Yes.
And what our functions and what our mission is.
Yes. Which I can read out loud if you would like.
That means that if they move us over and they're going to change the purview of what we do, which is, I think I heard from Ms. Hassel. Is it Hassel?
Hassel.
Hassel. Mm-hmm. From Ms. Hassel, that's a concern. Then they'd have to change the code, right?
Oh, the equity office is not written into code. I'm sorry.
I thought you were talking about this commission.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The commission is
written into code.
And our
but
function and what we do.
Our
commission, but
right.
The equity office.
But
right.
The equity office is different
and
from the commission.
And we come under the equity office, right?
No, y'all are under the city clerk's domain. So all boards and commissions are run by the city clerk's office,
okay,
which is...
Why is it, I'm just trying to understand this structure. Why is it that we as a body are getting all our information from you guys? I thought we were sort of under you all.
City council charged equity office to be involved with commissions.
So we've been appointed, or not me, but Jeremy now, I used to be the staff liaison. We were just appointed to be the staff liaisons to this commission. And then there was a resolution from city council for us to kind of support the quality of life / joint inclusion commissions around the budget process. And so that's really like formally where we kind of support these commissions in terms of helping y'all work more collaboratively. And then also there's special initiatives too, like the quality of life studies that our office is kind of in charge of the contracting and all of that for the whoever will come on board to kind of facilitate those with y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I'm assuming there are other cities in Texas and maybe even the nation that have offices like ours, right? Like Hispanic Quality of Life Commission, and then an equity office or some type of, I would imagine. We're not exclusive to that, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
How is this different from what they're doing from the way it's set up otherwise?
With the office?
Yeah, what they're proposing.
Yeah, and maybe that's where I can speak. So I don't know if y'all watched the budget hearing that happened last week. There were, I think, 60 people. I was there, so I got to listen on the testimonies. There was one yesterday that had 104 people, I think, from which 90 of them spoke. So the 50 that we had last week, and then the ones that we had yesterday, majority of the people expressed concern about this decision. And I think some of the things that came up from that was how these offices were formed and the community engagement that happened to form these offices. in that it is not about so much looking into how other cities do it, but more so looking at the equity office that has been an example to many offices across the country, and that by losing their autonomy, meaning that they wouldn't be reporting directly to the city manager, then that that decreases the level of power, if you say, if you will, that then they will have. So there were many concerns from people who actively participated in that initial community engagement to create those offices, that feels like maybe eventually, yes, you want to have one department, but what people are pushing for is to have a community engagement process where people can have a say on that decision.
So when they create that, is it going to change what we do and what your office does?
I don't know if it'll change our office. I don't think it will impact the commission as far as I know.
Then that argument doesn't hold.
What
would you just said that it's going to change?
Well, no, it won't change the commission, but it will change the office.
So I think
they're two different things.
Yeah.
They're two different things. So, like, the commissions is, I mean, there's tons of boards and commissions. I mean, if you go on there and you look, there's just, it's overwhelming to see how many boards and commissions there are. But, like Jeremy said, that's all under the city clerk's office. They're part of the equity office, and so that's different from the clerk's office.
So what you do is totally different than what we're all about.
And so their role
yeah,
is...
Yeah.
So they happen to be in the equity office, they happen to be here.
So you
but
do
it doesn't,
other things.
Yeah.
They
do.
They work for you.
A lot.
Okay, so now since you've educated me on what this role is, thank you. Yeah. My role anyway. Sorry about all that.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking all those questions.
I
think that's why we have this, and so...
It helps everybody else, right. I guess. So now then... about ignorance. What is it the equity office does? There's my ignorance, and I do apologize.
No,
y'all
fine.
Are big. I mean, this whole thing is big.
Like, the main thing is the equity action tool, but I feel like y'all have it.
Yeah.
Y'all didn't make it through all the departments yet.
Yes. So our office was established in 2016, and it was really because of community members who were kind of outlining how these drastic disparities in our city, we're a wealthy city, but really bad disparities and outcomes for communities of color here. And so it was really from community push that our office was created. And early on, we co-created an equity assessment tool, which is what is used in every department in the city. It's really kind of looking at their policies, practices, procedures, how they do their work, and what their outcomes are for communities of color in Austin. And there's a whole kind of process to those, and that was our main charge. And since then, we've definitely grown in scope. So we have our immigrant affairs office is within our office, and it's one person. That's the budget we received was for one person. But the hope, you know, is to grow that effort. But we are kind of the leads with the library department on the enhanced library project, the pilot. We, of course, support the boards and commissions. That was Jeremy's role for...
That's how I got hired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of the commissions, right?
Yeah, I support all of the joint inclusion. I'm not the staff liaison for all of them, but I help support y'all work together and make that coalition building
work. Make sure
that work.
Communication is...
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
And the quality of life studies as well. So there's also, we're doing something, we have a mini grant program where it's grown over the years, but for the past several, we have a funding pot of about $250,000. And so we kind of worked with our purchasing office to really streamline the contracting process. It can still be a challenge working with the city administratively, but we kind of reduced a lot of the barriers for folks to be able to contract with the city. And so all of those awards, those mini grants, have gone to people of color-led organizations. We also, we act as consultants on a lot of the big projects. We can't change the outcomes for all of them because we don't lead all the projects, but we have been, really been pushing the conversation on racial equity for things like Project Connect, the I-35 expansion, things like that, the Cap and Stitch program. What else? So I can.
OPO, you can stitch joint reports.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we used to do our own data analysis for with the Office of Police Oversight and the Innovation Office, because the data that APD was collecting, well, you know, as we all know, data can be used in different ways, and so we were doing our own analysis of some of that data to kind of show where there are some disparities. So the racial profiling reports is what they were called. And so we were kind of the leads as well with the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force.
Emergency response.
That I heard yesterday from the testimonies is that you're positioned to make sure that there is racial equity lens in every process that the city has, mm-hmm. and that it's just, there's a lot of value in that. Because, not only because internally as a city we want to have that, but we know that businesses and everyone who follows the lead of the city will then adopt some
right,
of those
exactly,
practices.
Exactly. And like the training that you mentioned.
The training,
done,
right.
That's
yeah.
outstanding.
Yeah.
We do a lot of training.
So again, those things you're going to continue to do. Because that's not
we a hope so. We hope so.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really agree with what, you know, Ivana said that, you know, it's truth, like the further you get to power, right, you might be disenfranchised. And but I also think about are you under the right city manager? In my question, and I've always sort of had that question, especially when I went to advocate for the, you know, Quality of Life Commission. And so I you know, I don't know how far we go to propose things, but I also think that I think a shift may not be bad under a new city manager. I don't know that you all should be layered within a director, right? I think that Stephanie Hayden should oversee this department. I believe that it's not just about a city manager. I think that it's about the right city manager. And you know, and I think all the city managers are good in their own right. But as I'm thinking of the fit, as I'm thinking about the history, as I'm thinking about where we should be as a city in 5, 10, 15 years, I don't know if we can we go that deep? Can we propose that?
We can go as far as we want, and then you know, there is so much that
yeah, we can say. I mean,
we can say
we recommend that they remain as their own department under the specific city manager.
Yeah,
as far as I would want to take it.
Totally.
In my opinion. But again, I would defer to staff.
I think just not to lose track of the order, maybe we
right.
go back to
yeah.
yeah, calling people to.
Okay, so who under what city manager are we under now?
So Rodney Gonzalez.
It's an assistant city manager.
And it's only been the past couple months, really, that
yeah.
we've been
that's
under him.
Yeah.
So it's
and that's what I think I heard suggested, that maybe that perhaps to some extent we could be under a different city manager, that we could do things differently or maybe have better outcomes or better progress. Am I hearing that correctly?
I would say that having a city manager that is fully grounded in equity. I think a city manager who has led the health department, especially during COVID, I think that there is just a lot of synergy there, a lot of like community engagement. I want to make sure I'm clear. I'm not saying that there's a better city manager or not a better city manager.
Everyone has strengths and weaknesses. So.
Yes, I truly do believe that through the process of us advocating for the Hispanic community, there was a little bit more of synergy and listening here with different city managers than the ones that used to, who are over this, right? Like I specifically spoke to Rodney. about many things. So I would love to take Yvonne as one step further and suggest, or else we're just going to keep on doing this.
What led to this? Why would they want to even mess with us? What led to this?
Like, what led the interim city manager to make this proposal in the budget?
Or to combine these offices, if I understand correctly, that's what we're saying in this resolution. We want to stand alone, right?
Right.
And so what led to them saying that they think that, you know, that they would want us to fit under this new management style or management deal?
Giving the word to myself. I think from what we've been hearing from the city manager's office is that this is just to bring more efficiency to the city. That's as far as I know. I don't know if
they'll be smart enough.
I've also heard that it's, you know, like, well, how have they made progress on this? Maybe it is better to restructure them because they haven't hit these measures. And it's like, well, you know, it's a lot of work that the equity office is doing to undo all these systemic problems and inequities that have been around
centuries.
Right. And so, I mean, you heard they just opened in 2016. I mean, that year with those mini grants, I was one of the few people who, like, literally went through 200 applications and mini grants. So, I mean, they've come a long way for it to be these few years that you all have been around, but there's still so much work to do. So it's like,
Water. Do you remember when, like, people couldn't get water in the winter storm?
Winter storm, yeah.
The chief equity officer, because he had access to the meetings, said, we will get water to them. He redirected water, right? So even the small thing about getting people basic needs, being at the table, was so important for the equity officer. And I would say, yes, I know the equity office is working hard, and yes, maybe they haven't met, you know, their numbers, but they haven't had a chief, you know, they haven't, you know, when people are doing two jobs, there's been a vacancy for a year. That's just one example about with water. If he had not been at the table, there would not have been water that would have been redirected to the most needed areas. And so that's what having access to a table does for communities.
Right. So I don't know if there are any further questions. Otherwise, I don't know what's the process for the recommendation. Can we please share it?
Well, you want me to share it onto the screen?
Sure. Okay. I mean, we probably need to add what Sharon just said and whatever else people want to add.
Give me one second here. So, what's this one?
Is that the resolution?
The resolution
that was sent to us.
So I drafted that to bring it to the commission.
In the resolution form? Because he sent us a resolution.
Oh.
That's what I'm asking. It's a resolution that you sent us.
Yes, so that would be the resolution. We had to recall it because I think it was incorrect.
Well, this is a resolution, not a recommendation.
Well, I think it's in a draft form still.
So we have a template in the commission, so I just tell him what
it's about. And you did it by yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, opening the space today for feedback if people wanted to add more to it.
And then in there it has the resolution.
That created the space in 2017.
Oh, okay. No, I can remember it. And then this came, the joint commission, did they do something similar?
Spoke about it, but since we didn't pass it, I did tell them about this, but different commissions were having different conversations about what could possibly come up.
And it's also because this meeting was canceled last week, and it happens usually first, and then JIC happens the next day. And because this was canceled, this wasn't able to be brought to the JIC for consideration.
So I think JIC couldn't endorse it. They could have,
because we had not done our part.
Right. Yeah.
But couldn't that joint commission also have done
they could have written their own originated recommendation, but there were a lot of voices in the crowd with different opinions, and they wanted to wait until Hispanic Latino passed
so, like,
theirs and use
the
that.
Asian American quality of life said they were trying to meet the city man, the interim city manager, and they were saying they could see maybe the resilience office and equity office being an office together, but it doesn't make sense for equity small minority business.
I'm sorry, small minority business does fit. Let me tell you why. Because I was the chair of that commission, and the fact that they're able, that they're the ones that are bringing in all of the minority groups so that they can have an equal share on contracting, that's equity right there. And the best equity you can get is financial equity, because we wanted everything to draw down and help pull everybody up, right?
I think they were looking more at what the office is right now, what they're tasked with. And so when they were looking at what is each office tasked with, they felt that the resilience office and the equity office had more similarities than they did with the other offices. So for them, they were saying like the civil rights, the small business, and equity together, they're tasked with things that are too different, so it wouldn't make sense for them to be together in an office. Whereas they were saying like the, like I said, resilience and equity, they're more similar in what they're tasked with. So they felt like maybe the interim city, you know, meeting the interim city manager in the middle and saying, okay, maybe recommending they be with the resilience office instead of these other offices. Other commissioners were saying no, they feel more strongly about it being its own independent office, especially since that's kind of what everyone, you know, that's what that resolution said, and that's what, you know, some people went back down to. And so at the JIC, there wasn't, everyone agreed there's concerns regarding this decision, especially since there wasn't any community input or community engagement sessions or anything like that. And so everyone agreed with that, but as far as what to recommend, people were a little, were different, were looking at different things. Like I said, some people were like, no, we should try to work with the city manager's office as far as what they were trying to do. Other people were like, no, this is something that people in the community asked for, and we need to respect what was asked, and it's still something that's needed now. So.
How many votes do we need for a resolution to pass? I'm so sorry, I'm so dusty.
We will need 6.
Okay, thank you.
And just for the record, what was your edit, Commissioner Vigil, to the recommendation? I know there was a line that she wanted to add.
Well, I mean, I think one is deciding if that's the action that we want to take, or to me, maybe we can follow what the my understanding is that, you know, another action that people can take, because the sense that I'm getting today is that probably all of us are trying to understand what's happening,
exactly,
getting more information. So to me, maybe the action that we recommend is that each of us who are homework, we can send, you know, what was talked today, and then each of us can talk to our council members about the concerns or the support or whatever to them. So that seems like a good action.
You could table this to the August 22nd meeting, which would, I believe August 22nd is still before.
I was going to say, because that's,
it's not before, it's after?
It's after.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so doing that would be.
What's after?
So the
official adoption
of the budget by City Council.
16th, I believe.
On the 16th of August.
I thought it was October 1st is when he gets adopted. But, action is for each of us to talk to our council members about, as other commissions are doing.
So, I mean, we can either vote and on this recommendation, or we can
make a motion to that.
Can we see just a raise of hand who's ready to take a vote? You know, is that possible?
No.
Or is that like a vote? Like, I just would like to know, like, who's ready to take a vote and who, like, needs more time. Because
they can share that.
I think there's more people online, too, and I think.
To your other idea?
Yeah.
And I'll second.
I'm talking about the first. first. I'm talking about the first. I think that you brought a resolution, and so I think I'm just asking who is ready to take a vote on that resolution. That's all I'm asking is for readiness.
There can be consensus here about whether or not y'all want to move forward with voting. So this, there can be discussion from every single member to decide if they want to take action on this. That's allowed. It's not a formal vote. This is just us discussing amongst ourselves.
I know I'm ready. Some hands of whoever feels ready for a vote.
That's two. That's three.
Four. So that's only four people. Right? Am I counting right?
One, two, three.
Do that again?
So it's three.
Okay, so then there you go. So we should not take a vote.
Yeah, so then I think the proposed action is for each of us to take this information back and then talk to our council members if we have any concerns and if we support these. I don't know, is that a formal?
Yeah, I would. If you're making a motion, I'll second yours.
We don't need a motion. If do you all want to have this on the agenda for the 22nd? I know it may be retroactive, but you could. The commissions can still pass a recommendation if they so choose, even if it's after the fact, because it could still be put it for the record.
Right. That's right. Okay. We can do that then.
And especially if we're unhappy, if this should happen, the reality, and we're unhappy, we can always go back to that
recommendation.
Deadline.
Yes.
But here we are. We had concerns from the beginning.
Yes.
Yep. I feel like I'm just really concerned that there's been so many decisions made from the interim city manager's office without any public input. I'm really concerned that no matter what they do to change the office, that if their role is going to be not even anywhere near what they're doing right now. So that's just my biggest thing is because I feel like a lot has happened in these last few months that no community input was ever taken on things. Commissioner Silva.
Hi, yeah. I wanted to kind of restate what I had said in a previous meeting that because of my work, pretty much anything budget related, I would be recusing myself from a vote. So I just wanted to make that clear. That's why I didn't raise my hand. But I also want to just recommend that people just take a glance at the budget that you can, it's available publicly on digital. You can use Control F to find, the civic and business equity part, so you can read up on kind of what that department would be tasked with. It's on page 202. And then you can go on the city website and compare that to the missions of the different departments as they exist today. So I think that would be a really good way for people to get information and kind of learn about what these potential changes could have in store for the department. I just wanted to make that known.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I think in addition to that, maybe I can send it to you, Jeremy, but there was a public statement that was signed by 70 organizations and I think 200 people, as far as last time that I read it, expressing some of the concerns and listing those, just as, to understand what community is saying. And then I highly recommend that you watch the meeting, the public input that happened yesterday. That was for 5 hours. And then the one that happened last week, as I said, 90 to 95% of the people who spoke had many concerns about this decision. And I think through those like the community engagement that happened to build these offices and the why people have concerns. So I
can you send that to me now so I can send it to the public statement so I can send it out in my my follow up.
Any other final thoughts on this?
Like right now? Well, if whenever you get a chance, but I was going to try to.
I do have to, I just sort of want to be mindful that we are talking a lot about like the community needs and like the community and systems, but at the heart of it, there's still people who are employed. And seeing your department on a budget and having to live in ambiguity isn't the best for humans. And so I just wanted to say that out loud, that like we are with you, Equity Office, and that the work that you do does not go unseen, and that I know that these are tough times, and it's even worse where you all are usually advocates, and how do you advocate at this place, at this time? So I just wanted to remind all of us of like, the humans that are working. I know everyone knows that, but I just wanted to show my gratitude and also say we see you and we feel you, and we stand with you.
Thank you.
Have a great work.
Commissioner Castaneda?
I have one question, just for clarification purposes. As I was looking at the budget, it mentions that this, the Office of Civic and Business Equity is a newly created department, and I just want to be clear, has that already been established, or is that?
No.
That's a DSMB office, a DSMBR component.
So it is under the purview of the city manager to restructure the organization, but he did this as part of the budget, and so therefore it's part of the budget document and the process. So it has to go to a vote, essentially.
The city council.
Yeah, the city council vote. So no, it hasn't been created yet.
Okay, thank you. I was just wondering because the language in there is in present tense, so.
Yes.
That can be confusing.
Yeah.
And then I had seen Commissioner Silva, you had your hand up too.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to also, if folks weren't, and I think y'all touched upon this a little bit already, but just these, all of these offices, or at least equity and civil rights that are being discussed in this particular department were ones that were created from community input to council, and it was council action that created these departments. So I just think that is an important context to keep in mind if we're talking about changing these things. And then also, when we're talking about restructuring where different departments and offices are in an organizational chart can have a really big impact. When you're thinking about the, for example, Office of Violence Prevention, that's quite buried in APH, they're very rarely consulted on items related to violence and violence prevention. So I just think that these are things that we need to take into consideration when we're reaching out to our council members and educating ourselves a little bit more about what's going on with this process.
Right. And just to add on that too is, like you said, the office, civil rights office, the equity office, minority business, like all of these are around equity, and they're all just being like pushed into one office, so it's like they're being, I don't know, to me it seems like you're pushing it kind of further away and not putting it out front and as like a pillar of what, you should incorporate into all your decisions. So there's also that, and they're very much like community.
So it's either standalone, which is where we are now, right? Or as they're proposing to understand, bringing them all together in three things.
Commissioner Vargas, I know you had your hand up too.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I just wanted to thank you, Commissioner Silva, for bringing that to point, because I wanted to acknowledge that Commissioner Neva, that you did an amazing job reminding us that there are a large number of community members and organizations who are saying, this is not okay, wait a minute. There's community engagement here, and this office was created out of a resolution, and are we just discarding that resolution? What is happening here? So there's some historical data that I think that all of us are talking about, and as a commissioner, I'm being mindful of what the community is saying in large numbers. And the large numbers right now, and voices, I should say, are saying, this is not a good idea, and this is why. This is not your North saying it, but the community saying it. And so, I think we're agreeing that we're gonna go back and talk to our city councils, but I also think it's important that we listen to what the community is saying. And the community right now is saying no. And that's why I raised my hand that I was ready to vote, because I am like, the community is saying no, so the recommendation that I'm ready to vote on is saying, don't do it. And so I just wanted to say that, thank you for everyone who's voicing this. I don't feel like I need any other information, because there was obviously some meetings that gave us already a lot of information. Commissioner Silva, who recruited herself, but also shared some insight with us. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, no, thank you, Commissioner Vargas, for saying that as well, because yeah, it's like Commissioner Nettie said, there's a lot of people, a lot of organizations who are surprised to see this, and then concerned about it, so thank you.
Right. You think that you could get somebody to bring the list, or just give us that name, all the names of the organizations that are backing this?
Yeah, so the public statement that I talked about is the one that I'm sending.
So Jeremy will send that to all of us. And so, yeah, so everyone just reach out to city council member if you haven't already. And then we'll keep it on the agenda even for next month, even though it would be after the budget, but we can go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
And so I know we're running, we're running way late, so we'll just kind of, we don't have anything drafted for item 7, which is discussion and possible action to approve a recommendation to City Council regarding the respite beds across Austin and the health impact of the suites at different homeless locations. I know they came to do the presentation for us, and at the end they did have some recommendations. I'm not sure if that's something we do want to consider. We can put it for next month as well. So we'll go ahead and do that for next month. Number 8, discussion and possible action to approve a recommendation to City Council regarding City of Austin partnership, DPS. We went ahead and talked about that. 9, discussion on Elevate program at EDD with possible action. They weren't able to come this month, so we'll go ahead and also save that for next time. We did 10. Number 11, discussion on work groups and commission priorities with possible action on any of the work groups.
It's just a standing item.
It's a standing item we have in case we need to do anything with our work groups. And then number 12, discussion on determining a meeting date for a commission meeting hosted in person with catered food, with possible action to confirm this in-person event at the commission's regular meeting on August 22nd. So we did talk about having everyone come in person August 22nd, and we would have great catered food for us. And so I know that was the date that worked pretty well for most people, and so just want to make sure that that's still something that's worked for everyone. Commissioner Maldonado?
I will be on a work trip that week. Out of state for that entire week. Okay.
I mean, we can save that day, and we'll just miss Commissioner Maldonado, or we can schedule for
September
which would be, and I know Jeremy's looking up the date for us.
September 26th.
Okay, so then Commissioner Nettie can do September.
I think because we've been trying to do this since like March, I think, I would just say, let's just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And then Vanessa, we can do another one at the end of the year.
And the meeting would still be hosted hybrid, so you could still join us virtually if you'd like.
You can watch us all enjoy the food. I'm sorry. Whatever, you'll be on vacation.
You can watch us eat, girl.
Right, did you say work trip or like fun vacation trip?
Work trip.
No, I'm going on a work trip.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So
no.
I have a conference. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And any working group updates? If not, then... we can...
Any future agenda?
And then future agenda items. So the one thing we did talk about was a possible recommendation for the senior center. And then also, would we want PARD to come and talk to us about the center as well? Okay, so we'll get PARD and we'll include discussion, possible action on that as well.
Question, when we do PARD, Can we set the agenda in such a manner that we can ask about the Senior Citizen Center?
Yes.
So it'll be
a nice.
We'll ask PARD specifically to come just for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would say there is something that is attached to Gus Garcia in the bond.
So we
need to get their planning, like, you know, not just the director, but like the planning person who understands like the bond part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'll make sure to ask the staff member to have someone from planning, for sure.
Any other future agenda items? I know we'll have a few that moved over from this month to next month.
And I took track of that in the minutes.
Okay. And also, like, if you think of something, feel free to email Jeremy, and you can email me about it as well. And we'll make sure to get it on the agenda and set up. Let us know ahead of time. That way, if we need to invite people, we give them plenty of time to make it. Okay. If there's no other future agenda items and no one is opposed, then we'll go ahead and adjourn at 8:24.
Thank you
all so much. Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great night. Get some good rest. See you soon.
Next month with each other.
Yes.
Gonna
I have no idea yet. I'll try to figure it out though.
What do y'all want to eat?
Y'all always bring good stuff. So. Okay, what do y'all want to eat?
Oh, that's true.